This is Jim Morningstar speaking today with Leonard Orr, one of the pioneers of the modern breathwork movement. Leonard started developing the technique of rebirthing breathwork in the 1970s, and since that time has been a tireless proponent of self-healing and growth through the use of breath and conscious intention. I first explored rebirthing breathwork with Leonard in the 1970s and immediately felt the personal benefits and saw the clinical implications of helping clients release holding patterns that might take years or never be released with talk therapy. So this set me off on a lifelong journey of exploration and discovering of the power of breathwork in clinical application, as Leonard has inspired countless others to do around the world in his years of writing, leading seminars, and trainings all over our planet. So, Leonard, it's good to speak with you. How did breathwork come into your life, and how has it influenced your work?
Well, the truth is that it happened through 12 years of spiritual accidents. And my first accident happened in 1962 when I was in the bathtub one morning before going to work in a rooming house, and all my strength disappeared, and I didn't have enough emotional strength or physical strength to get out of the bath. I never had an experience like that, and so I didn't have any idea what it meant. But I didn't panic that much. I just kind of surrendered to the experience, and after an hour or two, my strength came back, and I was able to get out of the bath, and I got dressed and went to work. And really didn't understand or think about that experience much until after I perfected the rebirthing breathwork procedure in 1975, when I started experimenting with it with significant numbers of other people, is when I really understood what breathwork and what rebirthing and spontaneous regression is all about, and what divine energy is all about. And then I remembered that experience that I had in 1962 and realized what it was. Between 1962 and 1974, the next major event was unraveling my death urge, which I learned from my parents in 1967. I was suicidal most of the time between 1965 and 1967. And you probably should understand that I became spiritually enlightened in 1960. And so it was a real surprise to me, practicing self-improvement and spiritual enlightenment, realizing that we are energy, thought, and form, and that we create our own reality with our thoughts and feelings and our mind. And so as a result of raising the quality of my thoughts for 5 years, I realized that I had become more miserable every year. And so I reached the climax in 67, and in the summer of 67, I asked the question, why am I suicidal and why am I getting more miserable every year? And I decided to find the answer, and the answer was the death urge of my family tradition, which I learned from my parents. My mother died in 1956, and my father died in 1959. And so I had to confront these devastating feelings and heal them. And so I devoted myself full time for 6 months to transforming my death urge into a life urge, and it worked. And from then on, my life has been successful pretty effortlessly. Everything has kind of worked by itself. And so the death urge is something which we need to work out. And my first definition of rebirthing was unraveling the birth-death cycle. But in 1974 and 1975, I understood the power of the breath. And as a result of giving many rebirthing sessions to many people, I came to understand how the moment of the first breath affects the breathing mechanism of people, and how learning to breathe energy as well as air can actually liberate the breathing mechanism so that people can breathe fully and freely. So that's kind of a long introduction.
No, it gives us grounding in how this came to you personally. It's not through just reading books, but it's through your direct experience in liberating yourself.
Yes, I had many birth memories and prenatal memories when I was soaking in my bathtub. Actually, I didn't really get the bathtub habit in 1962, but it started happening a few years later, 2 or 3 years later. And then I just found myself spending hours and hours in the bath. 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours became a common experience for me, and spending that much time in the bath enabled me to really get a hold on my life, and it was kind of an involuntary form of meditation, transcendental meditation in the bathtub.
There's many people who have followed your lead and explored breath work, and myself, having done it clinically for many years, I've also come to realize that a lot of conclusions about life were done in water even before the birth process itself. So that water can help stimulate some of the prenatal experiences and postures that we took towards life. Did you find that to be true?
Yes, and in fact, I get mail all the time from people who say that doing 10 breathwork sessions and then doing warm water sessions and developing the habit of using the snorkel in the bathtub is the most valuable thing they ever learned, the most valuable self-healing skill they ever learned, and that they have been practicing it for 20 years. It's amazing to me that when I get a letter from a person or an email who says that they have been doing that for 20 years.
Well, I can attest to that myself, Leonard. You made a suggestion many years ago to go into water and breathe consciously morning and evening. I personally have been doing that, and not just taking a shower, but submerging in water and breathing morning and evening over 20 years. And I can attest to the benefits of helping to clear the slate, so to speak, consciously and re-energize myself with it. What do you see as the metaphysical roots of breathwork? You are also known as not just a practitioner and a teacher, but also a metaphysician.
Well, we're dealing with energy, with divine energy. And the basics of metaphysics is that infinite being or infinite eternal energy is the source of everything, and that that exists in the space between our thoughts. And if we have 50,000 thoughts per day, we have 50,000 opportunities to contact that divine energy, which is the source of all reality and the source of the universe. And so in the space between our thoughts is everything and potential. And as we use that space to take control of our thoughts, then we can create a much more desirable reality for ourselves. So that space between our thoughts is something that we can also contact through the breath. And so from the standpoint of metaphysics, I sometimes say that the mind and the breath are the king and queen of human consciousness. And so the breath is the power of the mind, and the mind is the director of that power. And so sometimes people get off balance and they become too breath-oriented, and we need to devote some attention to the mind. We have to definitely consciously work with the mind forever.
At first hearing that phrase, the space between thoughts, it may not be immediately understandable, and I took a long time myself to explore that space between thoughts and come to, oh, who am I beyond my mind? Who am I beyond the thoughts, and who am I that's producing those thoughts? And that you teach very well in your spiritual psychology work. To experience it, however, is very different than to know it. It's to live with a greater sense of certitude of who we are and why we're here. And I think you've been living your purpose in terms of teaching others the power of the breath and how to master the mind rather than be controlled by our own creations. What do you see as the role of breathwork in the evolution of consciousness on our planet at this time?
Unraveling the birth cycle is more than a philosophical concept, and people have a tremendous amount of anger to deal with. And if they act that anger out in society or in politics, then, of course, it creates a very undesirable state of things. And then also in relation to birth trauma, as well as the death urge, we have the concept of victim consciousness. And so people have to liberate, we have to liberate ourselves from victim consciousness and self-sabotage and self-destructive patterns so that we don't act those out in our society on a mass scale. And so when people learn to breathe energy as well as air, or they just learn the concept that there is a space between their thoughts and that it is the space where this infinite eternal spirit lives, and that we can have intimate contact with that 25 to 50,000 times a day, just that thought, I think, starts moving people in the right direction. And then when people learn the breath work and they are able to induce relaxation and peace, and every inhale and every exhale induces relaxation automatically. So if people learn enough about breathing so that they can relax, then they can see their mind more clearly, and they have time to view their mind and to see how they're creating their realities even before they create it, so that they have an opportunity to change their future. And that's a wonderful thing to think about happening on a mass scale to millions, or now we have 7 billion people on the planet. And so having skills like that becoming mainstream is an exciting potential.
How have you seen this happening personally in your work? What has fostered this movement most? Where have you found most success in this being spread?
Well, my first goal every morning is to clean and balance my energy body. And so I use the elements, earth, air, water, and fire, as the basis of that, as well as upgrading the quality of my mind. Actually, I like to read one or two books every week when I'm soaking in the bath. So I'm always upgrading the quality of my thoughts, and the quality of our thoughts determines the quality of our reality and our life. And my second goal is to teach everybody around me to do the same thing. So everybody around me has led me around the planet almost every year and into all kinds of interesting experiences, teaching breathwork and the institutes of health twice, for example, in Washington, D.C., and in hospitals and universities and medical schools all around the planet. And breathwork has been used extensively in a few companies, but I think that's something that is going to be happening a lot more, because the average life of a Fortune 500 company is 40 years. And so the executives, the employees, the managers, and even the stockholders self-destruct even companies with hundreds of millions of dollars worth of income every year. And so when you think about that, you realize that devoting some attention to the spiritual life of the employees of a company is actually a very high way of realizing self-interest or the profitability and productivity of the company. And so I think that more and more people are developing that value system, and that people who understand breathwork and people who understand metaphysics are actually starting to happen. Companies want to hire those people and offer those services to their employees. And in fact, in France, I just met with the most successful breath worker in France, and she has been teaching breath work and giving 5-day breath work trainings paid for by corporations, and in some cases paid for by the government of France, for two purposes. One is that the government of France supports mental health, and they actually require corporations to offer to their employees a training or classes or workshops in non-technical subject matter, which has to do with psychology and self-improvement. And the government also supports giving training to people a few years before they retire so that if they desire to work, they can have a new profession. So the fact is that that breath worker actually gives 3 weeks of training to older employees in order to prepare them to be breath workers when they retire. So that kind of thing is pretty exciting. And it's happening more and more. It's happening in Brazil, and it's happening in other countries. And actually, it can happen perhaps anywhere the breath worker has enough self-esteem to step into those opportunities.
Well, Leonard, you're hitting a nerve for me because I, in fact, over the last 4 years, got that bug to do this myself, created a business called In Wellness, and am now contacting companies to bring more direct health and well-being, not just to their employees, but to the whole organization. And recently, the International Breathwork Training Alliance has put up an initiative called Breathwork to Business and is backing breathworkers who have experience in taking breathwork into the workplace. So this is an exciting cutting edge, as I can see, because the workplace touches so many people and their lives, and at least in the United States, it's where they get many of their healthcare benefits. So preventative as opposed to palliative, or trying to heal something once it has been reinforced year after year, is truly exciting. So
Yes, I think that emotional honesty and spiritual freedom in the workplace is heaven on earth, has the capacity or the potential to produce heaven on earth, because most people spend most of their waking hours at work.
We had a holistic physician that worked with us for some time, and he loved looking at research, and he said the only thing on a global scale that had been positively correlated with longevity wasn't genetics or marital status or diet. It was workplace satisfaction, job satisfaction. And just what you said, when you think about it, all of the hours and energy that's spent there, if our batteries are being drained during that time, that's why a lot of people come retirement time check out. So this is really exciting what you would say is going on in France. Maybe we can carry some of that inspiration here to the United States. What other things are inspirational for you that you've seen awakening or birthing in the world around breathwork?
Well, the idea of spiritual community. I think that people who have certain interests can form free spiritual communities for their mutual support and spiritual growth. And so spiritual community is very important, and I try to encourage people to build spiritual community wherever I go. And I go back to places regularly in order to expand the quality of those communities.
Mm. Can you give some examples of what a spiritual community would do and how that may be different now than, say, it was back in the 70s?
For me, it's pretty much the same, but the idea of healing birth trauma, healing death urge, actually healing the damage that our parents has done to us, and healing the sibling rivalry feelings and how that contributes to inner misery in people in their daily life, no matter what profession they're in, is still radical. We are getting those concepts into our culture and into the literature in several different realms, and the number of people who are in the self-improvement industry are proliferating and achieving great results. It just needs to expand, and to talk about unraveling the birth death cycle is something that we can express very easily, but to actually do it maybe takes 20 to 50 years or longer. And so we need ongoing support. Everybody needs ongoing support in getting new insights and people who can dialogue with us freely so that we can be honest about our feelings in a safe environment and can heal and grow spiritually.
That's something that you have encouraged from the get-go, and I do remember and actually have taken that to heart, because you said anyone who is successfully doing breath work would, as a service to their clients, have a forum for them to share what's going on, because they can learn so much more exponentially when sharing with one another than just a single relationship with a breath worker. Since 1980, I have been initiating new little mini spiritual communities every year, and it's been the joy of my life, because it's given so much to me to do.
Beautiful.
That. We just initiated our new one just, in fact, just a couple weeks ago. And it's always exciting because each member of the community seems to bring a certain gift or a certain message, be a teacher for us in a certain way. So instead of having one teacher to thousands of people, there's thousands of teachers to thousands of people.
Yeah, it's a beautiful concept.
I credit you with that, Leonard.
Oh, thank you very much.
Planting that seed.
Yes, well, the two forms that I have spread, one is the weekly support group, which is a practical and convenient way of working with people and giving people support. And then the other one is called the one-year seminar, which is a longer meeting, a half-day or a full-day meeting that happens once a month. And so some people like one form and some people like another form and some people like both. But everybody needs to have a support group, and maybe eventually the political system itself will actualize the American ideal of the monthly town meeting, and everybody will have access to human as well as spiritual support.
Well, I believe you've written about that in terms of democracy and the foundation of democracy. Do you care to say any more about that?
Yes, well, our founding fathers wrote about it. They actually, in the Constitutional Convention, they said that the ideal unit of representation should be a maximum of one elected representative for every 40,000 people. And they actually drafted an article to the Constitution that was submitted along with the Bill of Rights to the effect that a congressman, a United States congressman in congressional district, would be 40,000 to 60,000 people. Unfortunately, that article wasn't ratified by the states, and so today our ratio of representation is 10 times as much. The average congressman in the United States represents 600,000 people. So the big fault in our democracy, which is being expressed very dramatically in what's called the Occupy Wall Street and the revolution all around the planet, has to do with the ratio of representation. And that seems like an abstract concept, but it is a very personal and very practical concept to have representatives that create small enough communities for everybody, whether they live in the city or in the wilderness. They have access to representatives that can facilitate meaningful community and meaningful dialogue.
And it relates back, in my mind, to people breathing together, people having their voice being heard and inspiring one another through having a small enough community to actually breathe together. And that's what the word conspiracy actually comes from, spirit to breathe and con with. So people who are breathing together are people who have a force.
Beautiful.
What is your cutting edge? What do you see in your horizon, your future, Leonard? You've been doing this for as long as I've known you, since the 1970s. And really, I described you earlier as tireless. You're amazing to me. And your travel schedule, just for one thing, going on your website and looking at all of the various countries you go to. So I realize it's your practice of self-care, which can keep you energized to do that. But what do you see in your future?
Well, more or less more of the same. Continue doing what works and keep improving the quality of it.
And in terms of advice or suggestions that you'd have for people who want to explore learning breathwork and maybe even training others or teaching breathwork, I know you give trainings. How would people contact you? What would they do in order to learn from you about?
Well, my website is rebirthingbreathwork.com.
Rebirthingbreathwork.com.
And so it's possible to see my schedule and to see my phone number, which is 540-885-0551. And I believe my address is there, and so it's pretty easy for people to contact me.
For as many people as know you and as far-flung as your contacts have been, I've found you to be amazingly accessible if someone truly wants to do the work.
I try to be.
Okay. Okay, is there anything else that you would like to share at this Breathwork Telesummit?
Well, we need to realize that one technique of self-improvement is not enough. And I've found that there's basically six that are really essential. And so the first one is to work with the mind. The second one is breathwork, which is to work with air, the element air. We already talked about water and the importance of soaking in the water to clean and balance the energy body. And diet and exercise is important. People have to devote some attention to that. And then there's fire. And fire is perhaps the least appreciated of the elements in our civilization. And I have found that fire burns away emotional energy pollution and restores the joy of life and energy. And it takes inches off the waistline, and to discover the spiritual power and healing power of fire is really an important thing for people to discover. And then finally is love, our relationships with people, and the idea of community. So that's six basic principles, and I really would like to stress the importance of people developing a balanced and conscious relationship with those six principles.
I believe you've referred to spiritual purification as a daily practice. Breathing, conscious breathing with air, diet and exercise, dealing with earth, bathing and submerging and drinking water as a water for purification, and then fire, well, being with the sun or sitting in front of a fire or candle.
Yeah, I've slept with the fire every night since 1981. Makes a big difference in our energy level.
Yeah, and so it doesn't take having to do some highly esoteric practices. Each of those things are something accessible to everyone.
Yes, and they're conveniently available in our civilization. It's the marvelous gifts of our civilization, but people have to become conscious of them in order to use them.
And that's where they can inspire one another, being in spiritual community. And so your books, you've written a lot of these things. Your books are also accessible online. If people go to your website, they can order books, can they not?
Yes, that's right. And actually a friend made a new website called LeonardOrBooks.com. So people can find some of my books online.
Wonderful. Well, I'm very appreciative of your taking this time to share your personal journey and then inspire us with how this has spread on the planet and ways that we can take the ball and run with it, so to speak, in terms of starting with ourselves and then creating spiritual community around us. So I appreciate your time, Leonard, and want to express my gratitude to you personally for the inspiration you've given me.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing the final result of this show and the book that you're producing as a part of it.
Okay. Thank you, Leonard.
You bet.